What's up, boys and girls? My name is Jeffrey Scott Mitchell. Happy Friday. Today is my Saturday, as I work tomorrow, so I had to take a day off during the week. One thing I found out about that, or realized about that, is good to have 2 days off in a row. For a while there, I was, going, and keeping my adrenaline up as long as I could, and kind of thriving on the idea of only having 1 day off. And then going back to work and not having 2 days off and sinking so far into an indulgent rabbit hole that it was so hard to come out. But the last couple weeks or so, I was able to have 2 days off, and it felt good. So I'm off today. I'll work tomorrow. I'll be off Sunday. And then, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I get my 5 days, hopefully, without, shift change, because I'm a flexible worker. I was hired that way. The position was created in the company for me to be that guy. So that's why, even though I worked for the company for 8 years now, 9 years, I've only been a permanent employee for five. In fact, my 5-year anniversary is coming up, or came up, or is now. And I get an extra week vacation, which I think is very gracious of this company I work for, best company I've ever worked for, most professional. I mean, responsibilities put on me. I'm not treated like a child. Supervisors, the responses, everything is just, I can go on and on about this place. To the point where it almost sickens me. They're so accommodating. Well, accommodating. Yeah, accommodating. I can say my supervisors are accommodating. Well, not accommodating, because accommodating makes it seem like that, it's more like help. No, you have responsibilities. You got to step up to the plate. This, everybody don't get a trophy, even though they try to make it feel that way. My boss, everybody don't get a trophy. You mess up, you mess up. You get called out on it, and you have responsibilities, and we hold ourselves accountable within the group, but in a very professional way. And I can't, they keep me on my toes. They keep me on my toes. Usually I work at a company. I've been working at 3, 4, 5 years, whatever. I done did everything, been through this, been through that. They did so much of it that I'm just bored with the place. It's time for me to go. One place I just walked out. I just packed my stuff and walked out. I had such a rapport with HR, I knew I could do that. I mean, I had such a rapport within the company, I knew that I could just, they would take care of me or whatever, And they did. Worked out very well. Because, I'm a good employee. I get along, good spirits, by nature in general. And I just get along, I seem to be amiable or simulated, or I don't know what the word is, but I just get along. Like today, today somebody posted about, when was America great? And, I'm laying in the bed, my morning quiet time, scrolling, and I usually don't weigh in, but so I started off with, when was America great? And, they listed all the, it was a meme where they listed all the atrocities from Korea to, the Japanese internment, to slavery, all this and all that. So I was like, well, what about when America ended the global institution of slavery? And I hesitated before I posted it, because I saw who had posted on it and who hadn't. And I saw who posted it, and I was like, dude, I want to get in this. And I hit it. And then since I hit it, it clicked on. Stuff started flowing. I started asking questions, and posing possibilities. A lot of it was semantics about when was America ever great again? Along the lines of, does great mean perfect? Does greatest mean great? If like the example I gave was, if your football team has a losing record, but you still win the division, you're the best in the division, but are you great? I'm like, nothing is perfect. There's good and bad in everything. And I basically said it may be hard to realize or hard to swallow that great doesn't mean perfect. And even with all the atrocities, this country still is great. And then the response was, I respect your opinion, but I disagree on every point. And I was like, well, the fact that you can publicly disagree with me may be American. Or should the right, and when I said, and I even wasn't even thinking about, I went, the right for you to do that may be American. And then I thought about it, rights is American. Individual rights is literally what the America and American is about. Declaration of Independence is so much. So, we all see things differently. Then I really, I don't just be saying stuff to be, contraire sometimes. I try to really, there's truth in everything I say. There's truth in everything I say. I never lie. And I will not lie or distort the truth just to make a quip or something funny. I won't do that. I joke. I use sarcasm. I'll use antagonistic misdirections. But there has to be at least 51% truth in everything that comes out of my mouth. I don't lie. I may use misdirections, or I may state something incorrectly using the wrong terminology intentionally, just to make it hard to really understand what I meant, to give like a, whatever that word is, entombo into, I don't know what the word is, but anyway. Because I just have that much ego and confidence in my ability that I don't have to lie. I just don't have to lie. Nobody is worthy of me compromising my integrity for. Number one, that's just statement stands on its own. Number two, I just feel I'm smarter. I can get what I want telling the truth. And usually, I've been rewarded and it works. Like, one of the main things is like, if I, sometimes I used to try to get backstage and they ask me, are you with the band? And I told you, nope. I mean, I would say in such a way, I don't say yes. I say, nah, things work. These things just work, personality, smile, approach. I don't know. It's just the energy. It's like the energy that I seem to have learned how to maintain or have grown into or maybe evolve to. And that would go back to my childhood, my parents, my early life. Story I tell is, my mother says, when I came home to a bunch of teenage girls. I was the first one. I was the great grand. I was the first one in that generation, that era. So I was a baby and a bunch of cousins. And listen, my feet never touched the floor. That's how my life went. That's the only life I know. And to this day, it's just like fish don't know where he went. I almost have to take it for granted. I don't know. It's the only thing I've known is to be that Jeffrey. And it seems to work for me. I really don't want to tie this back to the American great and racist and that and this thing, but I keep saying it over and over that it's just not my experience. It's just really not my experience. It's just not. It's just, I haven't seen it, this stuff. Only thing I see is on TV. And I'm not saying it doesn't exist. I'm not saying that, racism doesn't exist. I'm not saying, I'm not even saying right now that white people are out to keep black people down, because y'all know a lot of black people think that white people, the whole goal of white people is to keep black people down. A lot of black people think that the only thing white people want to do is keep black people down. And especially if they're rich. If the rich, white, and powerful, they want to keep everybody down. And that's where they go, they. That's where I always ask that question. Who is they? Who is they? I always ask that question. Who is they? Who is this they that you're talking about? You know, I get different answers. And even though I kind of understand what they mean by they, I know their intention. But for me, until you can quantify who they is, your argument means nothing. Your statement just means nothing. It's like, I don't want to bring, it's like God, you know, God did this, and I just let it go. Right now, when it comes to, you know, I've been atheist long enough, you know, I got mine, I'm cool. You know, the nuns are rising, you know, we're on the map, I'm cool. I'm not in that fight no more. I can just let it go by me. But when people, you know, reference God and this and that, I know what they mean. I know their intent. I know their faith leads them to that understanding or belief. So I could just let it go. I could just let it go. But when people, my new one is they. Who was they? Who was this they you're talking about? Did they get together and have meetings? Or was it something collective? Because to tell the truth, right now, what I see is a bunch of liberal. The they I see is liberal cancel culture, woke. So much diverse. Oh my God. I don't want to. I do want to, but okay. The whole woke thing. Remember, I was asking, why am I seeing so many black people on TV? It's to the point now, every person on TV is in a commercial is black. It just about everything is black. It's just, and it's sickening. It's sickening and insulting, and it's absurd. It's just ridiculous, if you ask me. I take it as being insulting as a black person. And I'm not even sure or how to put it, but I don't think the portrayal of these black people that I see in 90% of the commercials portray black people in a, not positive, it's not a negative light, but the most capable or most best, for the lack of words, the best light, it's usually the Mark Cuban commercial. But I know it's, you know, it's a farce and it's supposed to be a comedy like that. But the Mark Cuban commercial with the rapper, black female, just all hip-hoppy, with her feet up on the desk and Mark Cuban pitching to her. And she's like, nope, nope. You know, she just, you know, hip-hoppy style, just not dissing the white dude, not dissing the white male, but kind of, you know, like, nope, I ain't got time for this. You know, like, it's like the, and I'm going to probably say this, it's like the roles have been reversed. The traditional, stereotypical roles that we're used to seeing have been reversed. But then again, it is not even stereotypical because he is a multi-billion dollar man. He is the multi-billion dollar. He is actually a multi-billion dollar, you know, businessman. And then she's probably going to be, you know, a great rapper or whatever. But, you know, two different things, two different levels, whatever levels mean. And he's pitching to her and she's just kind of, you know, not dissing him, but dismissing what he's talking about. Like, nope. And for lack of a better word, I don't think that's the most responsible. Hey, that's a good word. I don't think that's the most responsible way to portray these black people. I mean, 90%, 90% of the people you see in commercials are black. And maybe 80% of those people, I don't identify with the demographic that they're trying to portray. I don't identify with the style or the intention or the nails, the booty shaking, the dancing. It's just not portrayed in the most responsible light, I think. Okay, and then from that, a funky drummer sent me a link to a podcast. And, you know, months ago, I was asking, how come we see all these black people on TV? How come we see all these black people on TV? What's behind this? Why are these companies doing this? You know, I'm not even asking if it's good or bad. Does it make a difference? Who's it helping? That's not even the question. I'm saying, why is it that way? And for somebody to say, because it helps people, that's not a good enough answer. Because this is a business. Commercial is a business. And capitalism is a business. This is a strategic reason. And I come to find out that there's something called environmental score, environmental sustainability score or governance, ESG. And there's DEI, diversity, equity and inclusion, equality and inclusion. These things actually affect your credit score. They affect how much a company or a business can borrow. So, and I'm not sure if that's social capitalism or what, but if the social, the left crazy AOC people got that kind of policy implemented into this credit scores of huge corporations, I got to clap for them. Even though I disagree with it 100%, that's a bold move. That is a boss move to promote what you want. They want this diversity, inclusion, and everybody gets a trophy. And I can't put them down for fighting for it the best way that they can. And that's a win for them. Even though I'm like totally against it, say I'm totally against it, I got to respect the victory. So now all of these companies and stuff, their credit score is linked to how many minorities they have, how they look, you know, as far as diversity, how they look as far as environmental sustainability, how they look, you know, like that. It's tied to how much money they can borrow. And that has a direct impact on their financials. And that I was like, whoa, that kinda, or it may have been the answer that I was looking for to why all these companies are jumping on this ally thing. And that would make the DEI industry, that would improve the profitability of the DEI industry. Because all these companies, hey, go out and hire blah, blah, blah to make us raise our DEI score. That's all they got to do. They ain't even got to do nothing else. Just go out and do it. You know, go out, you know, tell them what we need to do, or, you know, to put it more better, whatever that means. Have somebody come in and evaluate our company. Tell us what we need to do to be more DEI, ESG aware. Diversity, equality, and environmental sustainability aware. And then we'll put our name all over our brand. A lot of these commercials you see on TV, they'll show some diversity, person in a wheelchair, disabilities, overweight women, a lot of overweight black women. And I have a stance on that. I'm not against fat people. I can say fat, it's my podcast. I'm not against fat people or fat women or fat people, period. And it's not about aesthetics or looks. It's about health. It's not healthy. It's almost like you're promoting unhealthy behavior. You're almost like condoning that. Somebody that's obese. But then you see somebody obese on TV, you're normalizing obesity. But yet you turn around and you go to the CDC. Obesity is killing most of us. Or killing the most of us. Whatever I say, you know what I mean? So that's where I go with that. But you're starting to see all these things in commercials and stuff. And it's tied to their credit score. So that explains that. And as I said, if the left and the Occupy people and everybody who wants to save the whales and save all the dogs and heal all the black people and white guilt and all that, if there are people who want to promote that to get this social capitalism, if that's the right word into it, severe victory. Touche, well played, well played. So, what was I talking about? That diversity in just America. I mean, it's just not my, when I look at America, I got nothing to complain about. I have nothing to complain about. I can't find anything to complain about. I have to go back 2 or 3 generations. I have to go 2, 3, 4 stages of separation to find anything. Well, maybe my father. My father, they said he was discriminated against. He was, when he came up, They said he was the first one, first black family to stay, to move in on Duke, on our street. And, you know, of course, they had to go around and ask, was that okay? Okay, that okay? And then when he bought a house, you know, he went to the service, bought a house, got a job at the Internal Revenue Service. You know, so he was upwardly mobile. And so he didn't want to, when he wanted to move to Youngstown, because from Sharon, a little small town across the border in Pennsylvania, he wanted to move to Youngstown. And my uncle was telling me that, yeah, your father moved, he moved on the south side. Black people didn't move on the south side. He said he moved on the south side. He didn't want to stay with them. All the black people moved to. He stayed on the south side. He got in. So that's what I was raised. My neighbors were Spontax. I think Pinchum was, Pinchum, Howard Pinchum, Sidney Pinchum, and Pinchum, I remember their name, had a trucking company. They were black. They lived next door to each other. The Spontax were white. You know, it was white people on our street. But by the time I got older and realized it was black people on our street, like it was a lot of, we, you know, my street, Dewey was like, you know, one of the best childhoods a person can ask for, hanging out, you know, street lights, the whole thing. So he had to go through that. And there's rumor that he sued the government and won. Nobody knows for sure because he come from a school where you just didn't talk about any of your business. You know, a lot of stuff I didn't find out about him until after he died going through his stuff. Because it just wasn't our business. And we knew as he was dying or whatever, we weren't going to get it out of him. No sense in trying. So I had to go back. I went back home to Ohio for a few days or whatever. And went through everything in the house. I had to go through every piece of paper. And this man kept everything. This man had utility bills from the 1950s. He had pay stubs. My mother's pay stubs when she worked at Northside Hospital from the early 60s. Everything. Clothes, everything was there. And so I went through all that piece by piece, literally. And it was rewarding. It was a challenge. It was something that I'm proud of that I did. I was able to, you know, handle his estate. I was the executor of his estate. And I was very proud to be that, to be able to be that person to execute his will and to, you know, lay things out the way that I think he would wanted them. And I say that modestly because I'm pretty sure I knew. That man made sure I knew. No, he didn't make sure anything. Just the person he was, the example he was, just being around him. You knew. He didn't have to, it wasn't, you know, telling me, Jerry, do this, Jerry. There was some of that, of course, when I, you know, tested the boundaries, you know. But mostly I knew. I knew just by example. And embarrassing that man was probably my greatest fear, to tarnish that reputation. Because you see where the level, I could see at an early age, the level at which he held himself. And I didn't want to let him down. But I still wanted to be me. I would still give up the funk and funk this and funk that. You know, I was still, one of his main things was don't act a fool. And that's all I wanted to ever do. And I don't see how. So I know that had to drive him crazy. Especially when I would do stuff and then come back and in my way show him, say, hey, see, this works for me. See how that works for me? Like the time I was in the paper. I was like, oh, can we stop by a store? I want to pick up a newspaper. So I went in and I grabbed some newspapers. I came back out and I opened it up. Big ass picture of me right there on the paper. And I showed him. And you know, Mr. Mitchell, he ain't gonna give you nothing back. He just kind of, mm-hmm. And he just kind of, you know, he not going to give you nothing back. But I know I got him. I know I got him. And like, you see my picture and George Clinton's picture there. Because that P-Funk stuff for him was no. That's just a bunch of crazy black people acting crazy. And I was just, I got to go with the funk. I got to go. Then it got to the point he was, you know, coming back when he was still in back there. He'd be like, So he was just, well, so when's Pete Funk coming back to town? Because he knew when they came back to town, I'd be coming back. And then he saw a PBS special on him. And he was like, oh. Now, he wasn't like, oh, but he told me he saw a PBS special on him. And I guess he got a better idea of what, you know, what I've been going through the last 20 years, you know, growing up with that band and stuff. So, you know, that was good. I showed him that. I was in the paper. And, of course, he went out, bought a bunch of copies. And when I was cleaning up the place, I found all the copies he had. You know what I mean? He would have them laminated and all that and stuff. That's just was his way. Real conservative. He was born 1939. No, he was born 1932. My mother was born 39. He was born 32. So he was born Depression. He was Depression child. So that's the way he came up. And that's the way he ran his business. And that's the way he lived his life. And I have some of that frugalness in me too. And I enjoy it. I enjoy the strategy of getting the cheapest price. I enjoy negotiating. I don't like it. I don't like dealing with other people. But I don't like negotiating, but I like strategizing to get the best price and, you know, this and that. And more maybe like offering somebody, hey, you know, a barter. I don't like negotiating, but I like bartering. Say, hey, well, what if I do this? Can you do that? And they say, yeah or nay. Okay. How about this or that? I guess that could be called negotiating. But I'm thinking it's more. Hey, look, they tore this house down. Can you see? I should get pictures before they tear it down. I should get pictures for the before and after. Maybe. Oh, there's that squirrel, that dead squirrel that was been laying there for a few days. Anyhow, so, you know, that's how that goes. Now, the reason I went back to him because he, I guess that's first, what's it called? Stage of separation, 6 degrees. That 1 degree of separation. I was thinking about the Will Smith movie, 6 degrees of separation. That's like 1 degree of separation, you know, where he went through and, you know, what he had to endure, which was a lot lighter than what his parents had to go through. It got better and better and better until where, you know, me, I'm like, the battle has been fought and won. That may be putting it kind of sensationalized, maybe sensationalizing that, but the battle has been fought and won. You know, my parents fought that battle. Their grandparents fought that battle. I'm not going back to fight it because it's not in my face. I don't have a direct experience of this type of racism. Like, I tell people, I don't remember a case of racism at all in my life. I take it personally. I don't take it because I was black. Might be because I'm black. But I think it's because I'm Jeffrey. And I look at the person one-on-one, me and him, in a situation like that. Sure, it might be some. And a lot of times, or sometimes I'm sure, I agreed with a racist motivation to make a decision. I agreed. It's like, if you say like you got a whole bunch of black people working together and you know hiring a white person is going to disrupt things because you know the black people that you're working for, how they may react to this or that, you going to hire a white person? No. And aren't you going to hire people who you know and understand or feel you know and understand? Why would you want to hire a black person, bring them in an environment, set yourself up for a lawsuit? You know, it's complicated. And it's not just that they hate black people. It's just that it can cause complications in their business that they'd rather avoid. Where they can hire a white person who they just identify with. They can talk about mayonnaise. They can talk about hockey. I'm joking, see what I mean? Where a black person, yeah, we talk about Bill West. We talk about Spade. You know, talk about this and that. The common things you have in common. Is that racist? Is that culture? You identify people with culture. So, you know, I got it. And I would just go to the next one. Oh, okay. And I was able to, I guess, one thing I will say, to keep that out of my head and to not start thinking like that, even if it was, you can even say to have faith that racism is not overt and that the experience I have are not based on racism, I think I did better. I'm better off. I think that I'm better off than if I was on the lookout for it for every 5 minutes. Because if I'm on the lookout for it every 5 minutes, I'm going to find it every 5 minutes. So, and I call that a faith on purpose. Because I want you to associate the word faith with the traditional, with what you think of traditionally when I say faith. It's all about belief. You believe that, I believe this. You have faith in that, I have faith in this. There are things I have faith in, things that there's no evidence for. There's no evidence for a lot of things because my knowledge stops at a certain point. My knowledge stops at a certain point, so I have to take accumulative experiences to go on faith. And the way I gauge it is the quote-unquote success of my life. And success of my life is based on my happiness, quote-unquote, amount or ability to have or to get the things that I desire. And got no complaints. I got no complaints. It just boils down to that. And I only can speak for me. Can't speak for anybody else. Speak for me and mine. I look at me, my kids, my family, me and the family, my niece, granddaughter. I tend to look at, and what I'm doing by naming those people, is I tend to have a higher sympathy or sensitivity to people, especially family members, those family members who haven't lost their innocence yet. Like my kids, they done lost their innocence. I feel differently about them now. You know, like my granddaughter, you know, her innocence is just tantamount. It's the highest thing, one of the highest things right now. My niece, she's 21. She done lived a little. You know, her innocence is out there. She kind of made it to a certain point. So my sensitivity to her success or whatever, her well-being or whatever you want to call it, isn't as intense as it was. You know, it's like, you know, not, you know, she's going 21, she didn't really, you know, you can say she didn't get to live a lot yet, but you just reach a brink to where, you know, okay, now you made it this far, now it's on you. You know, you got to this point, now it's on you. It's your decisions. And as they get older, they get less appealing, they become opinionated, they become people, and they ain't cute. That's what I'm worried about. Granddaughter, there's gonna come a time when she ain't cute no more. You know, you'll still have feelings for her, you'll still have this for her, you'll have that for her, but it won't be cute. And like even my niece, when she got older, you know, she was still cool. In fact, as she got older, there were things we could do that we couldn't do when she was younger. Like go places, do this, I could even, you know, send her to the store, she could do this for me. She, you know, she became more a utility. So that kind of helped, you know, for the appeal, because I just don't be liking people just because of who they are. You got to have some utility or some functionality or a direct effect on Jerry Scott Mitchell. And so right now it's granddaughter. I just want her to stay, it's quote unquote innocent, take things in. As she get older, as she start developing to a human being, just watch her grow into it, you know, and just, you know, get there, get to that point. But anyway, I just got this on. I didn't even think I was going to talk this much because I'm on another kick. Everything is about Jeffrey for me. I love my time. I love, love, love being alone so much. It's scary. But I also love the internet because I have a platform to do this. And I can talk and only think about the things that I want to think about. And that's what I want to do. It's like I'm working on something. It's like I'm concentrating on something and I don't want to be distracted. But that's not totally true, because I do want to be distracted. You know, some people can't, well, but nobody can distract me. Let me just put it that way. I know how to turn stuff off. You know, so anybody hearing this, you can't distract me. I know how to turn stuff off. Now, if I cut stuff off and find out I'm getting a whole bunch of messages, I'll let you know. Stop. Slow down. But if I don't want to be disturbed, I'm not disturbed. My ringer is never on. On my phone, my ringer is never on. Notifications, very rare. Only time I turn it on is when something is being delivered. Instacart. That's the most times when I gotta, you know, talk about substitution for my food or somebody coming by or something like that. Most of the time my ringer's off, my phone's in my hand all the time. So when I look at it, I'm ready to be disturbed, quote unquote. And I stayed at my mother's last week and it was cool. I like staying at my mother's. I can almost say that now. I can really almost say that I like staying at my mother's. I can really almost say that. Pretty much. I mean, I probably could say it, but I just can't say it because I'm Jeffrey Mitchell. Not that I, you know, my ego won't allow me to say it. I just don't. It's hard for me to believe that. It's hard for me to believe that I enjoy staying at my mother's. But I really was in no hurry to get back. And usually it was, oh my God, I get out of here. Oh, even if I go away 2 or 3 days. Hell. Well, I don't know, but I was going to say when I go to Europe and stuff. Yeah, there comes a time where I need to get back home. Like on travel or vacation. There definitely comes a time where I'm ready to get back home. But, you know, if I'm staying with somebody, or when I go back and stay with my daughter, there definitely used to come a time where I'm like, oh, I got to go to a hotel and just being quiet. Because my mother, one thing about my mother, her TV is always on. It's always on. And there's no escaping the sound of it. And almost no matter how low she turned it, there's no escaping the sound. And she ain't got the best hearing in the world. Even though she can hear stuff she ain't supposed to hear. But you know, if you don't want to hear or whatever. But you just hear it. You just hear that constant, you know, commercials and just stuff constantly going, you know. And even if I shut the door and I do this, I try to devise ways. It was times I was sleeping with earplugs, you know. It's just, I need that quiet. Then I'll go in her room and I'll hit the mute and I can just, oh, I can just feel, I literally just feel my body just go, oh, oh my God, oh my God. So then I come home. And like I said, when I'm walking, if I'm talking, you know, I don't listen to music. Rarely do I listen to music when I'm walking. It's just me and my thoughts in my head. And if I'm at home, TV's not on unless I'm watching it. Music, usually, if I'm, you know, I'm in that kind of mood where I want to mellow it out, put on some music, take a shower, groom. But it's not nothing. There's no background. There's no background noise. It's quiet. It's just the only background noise is my thoughts. And it's like I'm compiling. It's like I'm compiling my thoughts. And I'm always like working towards whatever this Jeffrey TV thing is that I keep calling it. I'm building. I'm always thinking about stuff. Always pondering. Always doing it. And lately, I've been loving buying stuff. Oh my God, I upgraded my wardrobe. Yesterday, I was hot to Taylor. I was going to tailor a few hoodies I got. Like, I got an extra long, tall, and an extra large. I was ready to cut them things up, make them smaller. I said, wait a minute, let me put this on and take a before picture before I do it. I was actually at pins in there getting ready to cut. I was getting ready to mark it and cut it. I said, wait a minute, let me, you know, see what it feels. You know, so I put it on, and it was big, but it was big in a cool way. I'm like, I guess, you know, maybe it's supposed to fit, you know, this big and bulky, and I can wear stuff under it and blah, 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 blah. So I left those alone. But I did get rid of some stuff, some size 38 shorts. Just, you know, slimming down. Because I got my medium-sized underwear on now. Because I forgot when I used to wear these 38s, the large underwear, 38 underwear, how tight they used to fit when I got them. Now they all like, now they like boxers. You know, they just hang off me. Some of them don't even stay on me right. I threw all those away. The waistband is gone. And, you know, bleach stains faded. You know, I got rid of those. And I even got a whole pack of unopened large. And I ordered another pack of medium. So I'm wearing the mediums now. Tighter, more support. Whatever that means. Yeah, definitely more support. I can feel the support. There's a difference. So when I wear my, and I got rid of all my size 38. Now I didn't get rid of them. I got rid of a lot of them. Size 38 pants. So I got 36 pants. And I got a few 38s. Some of the smaller 38s that I got that were, you know, stylish. You get, you know, from the stores, you know, that always like, the size are always smaller than what they say they are. So I got kept a couple of those. You know, just kind of, I just love throwing stuff away. My daughter said, you love throwing other people's stuff away. When she said it, I couldn't disagree with her. I couldn't immediately disagree with her. I wasn't no, nope, that's not true. I was like, And I thought about it. I even like throwing my own stuff away. I just like organizing and pruning. And now I got all my clothes laid out. I got all my clothes. I got all these clothes and stuff, and I don't go nowhere. I wear the same clothes all the time, and I don't go nowhere. I got these clothes for this, clothes for that, clothes for that. I ain't gonna never wear them. I had to buy a shirt, a dress shirt, because I'm gonna take my headshot in a black shirt and I want to take in a medium size. So, how about that? I've been buying all these, I've been replacing my large, worn out t-shirts. You know, not like the white ones, you know, the color, you know, t-shirts, whatever those, Gildan, you know, whatever the black ones. You know, not like, you know, underwear t-shirts, like t-shirts, because I like, you know, blank. I don't want any writing on it, no this, no that. I just like it blank. So, I'm replacing those and fold them up and have everything all organized. You know, throwing stuff away that I don't use. I just love maintenance of the empire. I love maintenance, maintaining my estate. And it doesn't help, doesn't hurt at all that I look good, and I think I look good putting these clothes on, you know, thinking I'm looking all this and that. Like my goatee, look like, from what I see, my glasses and this, look like my goatee is working. I never had a goatee before. I like the way the gray is kind of doing that. I'm kind of, I'm trying to let it grow out, I guess. I don't know how to do it, but I guess I'm trying to let it grow out. I forget where I left off, but I was talking about my goatee, the look, and, you know, just clean up the empire. It's nice to, I like my empire to be sharp, whatever, the whole Jeffrey TV thing, you know, my cameras, my equipment, ordering stuff online. Yesterday, my work computer, I've been using a docking station. You could almost say old-fashioned docking station. Literally, you can say old-fashioned docking station. Nobody uses it. I've been using it. You know, because it worked for me. And so, and it started to get clunky. And then, you know, the new technology, I finally switched over, got rid of Dock Station. Because I was using Ethernet. I wanted to use Ethernet. Because, you know, in my mind, I just really embraced Wi-Fi. Literally. At home, everything is Ethernet. I got cables for all my real stuff. Quote, unquote, real stuff when I want to do real work. I use Ethernet. But I'm starting to find out with the new Wi-Fi 6... and the new Wi-Fi, you know, there's almost no need for Ethernet anymore. Then you use a VPN, you know, so you don't need cables as long as you get a good signal. But I'm old school. So yesterday I got rid of the docking station. I hooked my monitor up using an HDMI cable, and I had a USB-C hub, you know, the new hubs that, you know, the company gave me. I had just sitting there. It wasn't even using it because I was, and then I finally, you know, got things wired up. Works better. Less clunkier. Everything is just better. You know, once you make that move, once you get in your head to make that move, it's just better. Then, you know, I got rid of my, one of the computers in my bedroom. Went out and bought a new laptop. You know, it was like, I was going to get a step up my desktop game and shift down all the laptops, shift down all the desktops. I was going to like get like a really, really, really good desktop and take my really good desktop now, move it to the lesser, and then move the lesser into the bedroom, you know, for my TV watching and doing stuff in there. And I said, no, let me get a laptop. So I got like a fairly good laptop. I got an i7 12th generation, 17-inch screen, touchscreen, and it has features. It has the facial recognition, fingerprint. It just has modern things that, you know, that upgrading accommodates you with. That I usually, you know, I wouldn't buy it. You know, I wouldn't just go out and buy it because I'm cool without it. But once you, you know, get exposed to it, say, hey, let me try this. Let me try that. Took all my passwords, put in a password manager. So now I don't know my passwords to anything. You know, big 20 character password. I don't know what my passwords are to anything. I got to use the app. Well, I know what the password is to get into the app. And even that is now using Windows Hello, which uses my fingerprint and facial recognition. But there is one password, you know, that you got to remember all the time. You know, that you got to hold on to that. Then you have your key and this and that. And now I guess they're coming up with pass keys now. Even my company is going to implement them. Where passwords are going away. People are going to be using pass keys. I got to look into that. Or pass phrases or something. That's the next thing. Now I pay for 2 years of password management. Everybody's going to pass keys now. So, but I think, you know, it'll all be handled. But this upgrade is just a good time. It's just a good time for me. I'm just enjoying it so much. My blood pressure is down. You know, it's fun food shopping. It's fun being anti-salt. The job is good. I'm more focused on my job now. My head is a lot clearer. I'm clear. My thinking is clearer. My thinking is cleaner. I'm leaner on a lot of things. And not just, you know, physically. It's just good. I bought a stand in my bedroom to hold my TV up and mount and just really nice. Car, change the battery, just stuff, you know. A couple months ago, they gave me a free engine. They replaced the engine in my car, apartment. You know, just monitoring everything in my life. Or keep an eye on it. My credit score went over 800. You know, my savings, the stock market of my 401k. I don't want to talk about. I mean, granted, it's not my money anyway. Granted, the money accumulated over the rise of, you know, of the stock market. I'm playing with the house's money anyway, but it still hurts. The numbers still hurt. So I'm checking the stock market. You know, I got a shortcut on my phone. Check the stock market all through the day just to see, and I'll log in. You know, check, you know, my RAs and stuff and this and that. And, you know, that's all. You know, I just, you know, I want to do my, and you can see I'm doing it now. You see, I'm actually going through my life now. If you watch me, you get to watch me go through all the aspects of my life that I'm monitoring, summarizing. I want to get my podcast. I think when I was making my podcast, you know, to upload to Spotify and all that, I would put an intro on. I think I'm not going to put the intro on no more. It's too much work. I think I'm just going to take the extracted audio and just put it up there. Because at the beginning, I say, hey, what's up, boys and girls? Anyway, then at the end, I say my outro. So that should be enough. I ain't got to have no, this is Jeffrey DV podcasting, blah, 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 blah. Too much work. I'm just going to take them all, upload them. And what I do is I take that audio, stick it into Microsoft Word, transcribe it to text, take that text, stick it in the ChatGPT, and tell ChatGPT to summarize it. Take that summary, post it on the video, post it on the podcast, and we go from there. I want to be able to, hopefully, I want to see if I can bulk export to, like, say, I want, like, set up a batch process to export, like, maybe 20, 30 files at a time to text, audio to text, while I'm sleeping or something. Just let it run for hours unattended. And just take all those, and they'll be labeled, name them, boom, 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 boom. And that I know I need to do going forward, because I want the library or the media or the, what's it called? Not library, media. The library. I want the Jeffrey TV library out there on the internet or wherever, be updated for when that magical day comes, when I'm discovered by humanity for whatever it is that I'm doing. I want to be prepared for my moment. When I get on CNN and they say, well, where can they learn more about you? JeffreyTV.com. Hopefully I'll be wearing my Jeffrey TV shirt. And JeffreyTV.com. You know, hopefully they go to Jeffrey TV. I got to get Jeffrey TV set up. So they hit that, boom. I want to hit them a certain way. I want a certain way in my mind. I want to hit them with that, boom. You know, because a couple people, few people that I have show my website for, you know, like, okay, I'll say like eHarmony or something. I meet a girl or something like that. And they say, well, you got this, that? I show them my website. I get the response that I want. So that was then. I don't know about now. But, you know, so it does have impact. There's work put in there. I'm happy with the, you know, when random people or other people go to look at the site, what they get out of it, the responses I get from them. A lot of it, years ago, decades ago, 20 years ago, it's too much. It's so much. It's too much. That was back before people really knew how to use the internet. And it was still new. It was like, oh, it's too much. It's so much. Why is it so much? You know, they weren't used to having that much information thrown at them at one time. Now it's kind of the opposite. You can just, people know how to sort, sit, you know, summarize, hit the key points, dive deeper if they want to. And, you know, not be so affected by another person's opinion and all that fun stuff. So, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah, that's what I want. I want to, because I said, look, all these, I got, everything is organized, number one. All my data is organized. Let's just say, all my data is organized, backed up, and encrypted. So, you know, it's safe. It's pretty much, you know, I got off-site storage. I think I might even take a copy back to Ohio. I'll leave a copy back in Ohio. Just for kicks. So, and I got off-site, 3 different locations. So, like, right now, the way it stands, if a nuclear bomb was to hit Van Nuys, well, see, and I still got stuff on the internet. I got still a lot of stuff on the internet. That's another thing. See, I just thought about that. Stuff on the internet will live. Worst case scenario, nuclear bomb hits Van Nuys, big enough to destroy all the copies of my data that I have. Because right now, they're spread across. Did I just say where I lived at? I'll edit it. But, you know, say if a nuclear bomb was to hit my city. You can Google. Well, actually, another thing I did, too. I got I solicited a incognito, a service to remove my identity from websites. I paid them a certain amount of money. So they go out and they send out this and they do that. And they try to pull. Because I put my phone number in the internet. And the first thing that came back was a search. They had all my information in it. Where I lived, everything, my mother's name, where she lived, all of that. I was like, no. So what I did was I paid this incognito, one of them was called Delete Me, but I used incognito, and they start, you know, sending out stuff, get my stuff removed. But the one that I really wanted to remove, I had to do myself. I said, hey, I'm Jeffrey Mitchell, would you please take my stuff down? And they did. You know, they wanted to verify a few things, and they did, and they took it down. You know, so at least now when I put in my phone number, my whole life don't come back right in front of me. So that was good. And there's stuff like that I'm doing, you know, just security, passwords. I just love data. I love, you know, that. And I said, not, and I got stuff. I don't got too much in the cloud. I guess I start could use. I got terabytes of stuff. You know, I guess I could put stuff in the cloud. But if I put stuff in the cloud, you got to figure out how, you know, if something happens, who would get to it, who would have access to it, would they know what to do with it? See, I'm planning all that, how to leave instructions, where to find all my stuff, you know, not just financial and money stuff, but like what to do with my data, you know, how to keep my websites going, where to put my, you know, who to pay, subscriptions, hosting, and all that I've been working on. So, you know, something happened to me that I gave my niece and my daughter information that should lead them to the information that I want, you know, them to have. So, mom, what is that? I never saw that before. Like a microphone green and a star green. I never saw that on the screen before. I don't know what it means. I don't know. Maybe because it's dark. Look at my teeth. My teeth are all messed up. I look like a country hick. I didn't mean to say it that way, but you know what I mean. My teeth is usually perfect. Well, I thought, you know, perfect, and it looked professional. Not professional, but, you know, refined, high class. Now I look like a street thug. Look at that. And the gap. I think I got a big gap now. But that can be fixed if I want it to be. That can be fixed if I want it to be. And there you have it. My name is Jeffrey Scott Mitchell. Swing on, y'all. Two times. For me, for the fun. For every elementary particle that's ever existed in this, or any universe that ever was, is, or will be. A totality of it all, a theory of universe, an hypothesis of all as one. My name is Jeffrey.